You're listening to Aging Redefined with your host, Kendra Vallone. This show will give you the tools and information for better health as you age. Now, here's your host, Kendra Vallone.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another show of Aging Redefined. I'm your host, Kendra Vallone, and I'm joined by my co-host, who is board certified in pulmonary medicine, internal medicine, with advanced training in anti-aging, which we all love, Dr. Larry Emder. Hi, Dr. Emder.
Hi, I'm doing great. I'm anti-aging just as I'm sitting here. I'm getting younger.
That's the reason that you're on the show. I'm constantly just wanting to pick your brain about tips and how to stay youthful with the glow.
There you go.
Yeah. And taking tips from you as far as how you live your life. And I just went on a nice holiday myself. So it was...
Oh, that's right. Where'd you go?
Yeah. San Francisco.
That's
actually.
Right.
Oh, and I got a story for you.
There you go.
So I know the show is, I always want to segue this. The show is called Aging Redefined. So it's about healthy aging. And typically we throw in dieting and all of our special guests who we've got an amazing guest today. But all of our guests kind of really push the show towards how we can live a healthier lifestyle. But in the meantime, Dr. Emder and I seem to go on holiday quite a lot. I say holiday because... That's an Australian thing.
Yeah. That's a great way for stress management.
Yeah. Okay. So here's my thing. We went to San Francisco, right? Our flight kept getting delayed last week. You know how bad all the weather was, right?
Yeah.
Just like it was raining and stuff. It was like out of Florida. So our flight got delayed by a few hours. We get into San Francisco at 8 p.m. My girlfriend picks us up really quick. We go out to dinner. We get back. The car was smashed into, like the window was smashed.
Is it a rental car?
No. Because my girlfriend who lives in San Francisco is who we went to go visit. So she picks us up. All my stuff.
They steal your computer again?
How horrible is that?
Did they steal your new computer?
Glenn's computer was right next to the bag.
Okay.
And they didn't take his computer. So they took my bag because it was kind of an expensive brand name.
Okay.
This silly, stupidly.
But they knew their stuff. They took a quality bag.
Yeah, totally. And it had all my makeup in it. And this is how bad that is. So, like, you were
makeupless the whole weekend?
No. I fixed that issue.
Yeah, you went
right away. But it's so expensive. You don't think about it. For men out there that are looking for, like, Christmas gifts for your wives, just get them some makeup. Well, granted, make sure that it's the right kind they like. But that stuff is really spendy. So they grabbed my bag. And it basically had the beautiful bag is why they took it. So that was kind of pricey. And then my makeup, which is easily over $1,200.
No way. Are we talking that much money?
Oh, yeah. It was out of control. And a new book I had in there and my teddy bear. And I know I shouldn't be admitting this on the air, but it's like one that I've had for years and years. He's traveled all over the world with me. Paris, and France, Italy, all over the place. Yeah. So they stick my teddy bear. And the cop who was there doing the, we had to make a police report.
Sure.
It was in an area that was not a really good area. So, you know, they're working with like thugs and gangs and I'm standing here like in a scarf and I'm saying they stole my teddy bear. He was serious when he looked at me and he's like, can you describe what the teddy bear looked like?
Had two eyes.
Sewed
on buttons.
It was brown. And he's like, all right. And can you explain, can you tell me the size of the teddy bear? What exactly, what did he look like? I was like, I don't know. He's like, is he this big or this? He was like using his hands, like this big old rough cop trying to describe my teddy bear.
I got a tip for you.
Yeah, put the stuff in the trunk.
The trunk.
I wasn't thinking about it, especially when
I'm traveling. You think you're on vacation. The thieves are going to be on vacation, but they're looking for items of interest that they can grab real easily. And I'm real anal about putting all my when I'm traveling them so I don't look like I'm traveling.
I need to be now.
Yeah.
I mean, especially the computer being stolen out of the back of my car, and then this bag. It's got me thinking about things now. So as I'm driving, I'm, throwing my purse in the trunk if I go into the grocery store and don't take my purse or something like that. So, but it's really sad.
Yeah.
Like what?
Hey, I had my my Bose $350 headphones lifted in the airplane flying Southwest.
Did you really?
Yeah.
How did you?
And I'm usually very, anal about protecting all my.
But how would they have taken those? Don't you wear them?
Yeah. So we're connecting in Chicago and we're staying on the plane. And the pilot says, hey, you can get off the plane. and we'll watch your stuff. And I left my guard down thinking, well, they'll watch my stuff. Mm-hmm. So when we went out to get the food, then come back to get on the plane, the other plane's locked. When by the time we got back in, my headphones were gone. So I left it out of my sight. And I did call Southwest and their, you know, complaint department. And they say, you know, tough luck.
Did they?
Yes.
They didn't take care of it.
They said, you know, register on their website, but they don't cover, you know, things that are left in the cabin. I said, well, you know, your pilot told me leave it in the cabin like it was going to be protected. So this is a time of the year when people have sticky fingers and we're traveling with expensive things. So don't let them out of your sight. Put the stuff in your trunk. And this way you won't have to go and buy $1,200 more of makeup.
Yowza. And part of that, I mean, part of that was I had like anti-aging cream in there, which you would appreciate.
Oh.
Always have to be. And that stuff's not cheap.
No, it's really not.
Unfortunately.
So what about computers? Did you buy your new computer yet?
No, not quite yet. I'm going with the Mac, though. I think I'm going to do the MacBook Air.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I'm going to go with the MacBook Pro.
But we talked about that. The big difference between the Pro and the Air is the weight. CD-ROM, right?
Yeah, well, CD-ROM, the weight, and the battery. CD-ROM. Battery life is much longer, I believe, on the MacBook Air.
Air.
So
there's not as much weight, perhaps.
But I'm thinking about, you know, ordering it maybe on Black Friday. You think we'll be able to score a better price?
Not on Apple.
Not on Apple.
I don't think Apple participates in that.
Well, they do something, because I got an app saying, you know, you can buy like Apple TV or something. Hmm. But anyway, we're shopping for a new computer.
Why? Oh, you are. I thought you got one.
Well, I have one, but it's old. And as my disk drive doesn't work, number one.
Okay.
Number two, the battery life is only good for like an hour. So when I can't travel with it because when the plane is like dead after an hour.
Right.
And the memory is full. And, you know.
You just start collecting computers.
Yeah.
This was when our children were born.
That's right.
2008. Yeah.
So I think we're gonna pop the line. But we're ready to start a new segment of the show.
Okay.
It's called Hey, Dr. Emder, what are you doing to stay healthy?
Took the words right out of my mouth. What are you doing to stay healthy? Wait, we should we preface to our audience that might not have heard the show before that you do have some very strange diets?
I do. I'm into, I try almost every fad diet.
Yeah, but not fad like low carb and weirdness.
No.
You're not necessarily.
Well, I'm vegetarian. I mean, that's kind of weird on itself.
Well, you're not just vegetarian, you're like vegan.
Yeah, almost vegan. We do eat a little bit of fish. Yeah. But, you know, this is a time of this year when it's very hard to keep the weight off. Yeah. We have all these parties, there's extra alcohol. And, you know, from a previous show, I just got back from New York. And what I found when I got back from New York is, guess what? I gained like 5 or 6 pounds.
Did you really?
I really did.
Even with all the walking.
Even with all the walking.
Well, I mean, there are some good restaurants.
So, that was the thing. You know, I'm eating out a little bit more salt in the food. And even though I was splitting meals with my wife, next thing I know, I'm up 5 pounds.
Wow, and that's impressive. So you look good, though.
Thank you. Well, we've got about 3 of those pounds off.
Oh,
but people say, well, you know, that's just water weight. And you know what? That water weight turns into real weight after a couple of days. So, and we're entering that season where we're all going to have 3 to 5 pounds of water weight.
Oh.
So what I'd like to share with everybody is what I'm doing this week to get some of that weight off. And
okay.
It's actually working. And it really comes down to, you know, knowing three things. One is your BMI, your body mass index.
Yeah. How do we find that out?
Well, you go on the web, just put in the body BMI calculator, and it's based on your height and your weight and your sex.
Yeah.
You should have a BMI between 22 and 26.
Okay.
If you're over 26, you're overweight. If you're over 30, you're obese. If you're over like 33, you're severely obese. So you can figure out right away if you're overweight even before you cut into the turkey tomorrow. And, you know, you want your BMI under 26 for sure.
Okay.
And so that's one issue. The other issue is that you have to burn about 3,500 calories to lose 1 pound.
Mm.
Or you have to lose, or you have to ingest 3,500 calories less a week to lose a pound. We're talking calories.
Okay.
So let's go with our typical breakfast. All right.
Okay.
Typical breakfast is a little scrambled eggs or some eggs and bacon.
That's a typical breakfast for you every morning?
Well, this is one breakfast.
Okay.
Eggs and bacon and hash browns.
Okay.
Some people eat that in America. Okay. And toast with butter.
Ooh, that's so good.
Doesn't that sound good?
Yeah, that sounds amazing.
Eggs and bacon, just one serving gives you 130 calories. But you usually have, you know, two eggs and two pieces of bacon, so you're at 260 calories.
Okay.
Those hash browns, 300 calories.
Ooh, they're good, though.
Butter, a tablespoon of butter, 100 calories.
Whoa.
So you do two tablespoons, 200 calories.
Okay.
Piece of bread dry is about 60 calories, but you have two pieces of toast, that's 120 calories. Okay. That comes up for a grand total of about 880 calories for breakfast.
That's a big breakfast.
That's a big breakfast.
That's a Sunday breakfast.
Okay, well, some people have a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
Yeah, that's not good.
Or the other American breakfast is pancakes. So three pancakes, guess how many calories?
A million. I don't know.
Well, with butter and syrup,
500.
About 750 calories.
Oh, wow.
Okay, so here's what yours truly is doing. All okay. right. Well, actually, I have to thank my almost brother-in-law. I'm doing a protein drink in the morning for the last week.
Okay.
Why protein? You know, when you have a carbohydrate, you know, like, you know, milk and cereal, you notice I'm still hungry like an hour later and mm-hmm. I want something more to eat. Mm-hmm. Or if you have a donut, you want another donut. Mm-hmm. And the problem is a carbohydrate diet makes you want to have more carbs, so it does things with your neurotransmitters.
Right. We talked about that when we were doing, you know, talking about the gluten. Like having gluten and wheat, it makes you hungry earlier.
Yeah, exactly.
It?
Well, if you go with a protein, it's more filling. And number two, it's a great source of your protein. So I'm doing this just off the shelf protein drink, organic rice protein drink. I mix it with almond milk. It's about 150 calories.
Okay.
All right. And if you subtract that from the 880 of the, you know, scrambled eggs, bacon and toast, that means I'm saving every day, you know, 700 calories, 750 calories.
Yeah.
730 calories, give or take a slice of butter. Well, if I do that 5 days a week, guess what? I'm saving 3,500 calories or a pound. So if you do this protein drink, or, you know,
like you're talking about replacing a meal.
I'm replacing my breakfast with a protein drink. I'm getting the protein that I have trouble getting into my diet. And by the way, I'm saving a pound a week or 4 pounds a month. Or 40 pounds a year.
That's pretty good. I'm right with you. I started doing the protein shake as well. Just to make sure that I'm, you know, full for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
30 grams in the morning. Though your body can only digest so much of it, right?
No, it can handle the protein.
It can?
Yeah.
At one sitting?
So there you go.
Okay.
Protein drinks
like
in the morning. And you're good for 4 pounds
a
month.
I like this. Now I'm excited to hear what you're going to do next week to be healthy.
Okay.
So we'll ask you then, Dr. Amber. All right. Audience out there, stay right with us. We will be back. We have an awesome show for you today. Vitas Hospice is our sponsor, and we're going to be talking about, you know, chaplains. So stay right with us, and we'll be back.
When Joe was in his last days, I was frightened of not having the right help at the right moment. So I set out to find a hospice I could call at any time, day or night. Only VITAS provided telecare, the 24-hour access we needed.
Mom's illness was overwhelming toward the end, and I wanted a hospice that had everything and everyone we needed. We discovered only VITAS employs more physicians who specialize in hospice care than anyone nationally. That made Mom and us feel better.
When Carol was dying, I promised she could stay at home and had the very best care. I did my research. Only VITAS had the experience to take care of the love of my life.
Call VITAS Innovative Hospice Care toll-free at 877-647-1124 for a free hospice evaluation. That's 877-647-1124. Or visit VITAS.com for more information.
Transition is always difficult, especially after surgery. At Villa Las Palmas Healthcare Center, we make sure it's as efficient as possible. As one of the highest-rated Medicare facilities in San Diego, we offer a variety of services to meet your needs. From subacute care to general physical therapy, we'll help create a plan to get you back to where you want to be. If your doctor recommends skilled nursing as your next step, come visit us and see how our skilled care has what you need to get back on your feet. For more information, please visit our website, villalaspalmascares.com.
No one wants to think about having a heart attack, but should you or a loved one need life-saving care, you want to go to a hospital that has a track record for saving lives. I'm Dr. Mike Mikowski, a cardiologist at Alvarado Hospital. As a designated San Diego Heart Attack Receiving Center, we recognize the importance of getting life-saving cardiac care. Our state-of-the-art cath labs offer life-saving treatment when you need it most. For information, visit alvaradohospital.com.
Alvarado Hospital is one of the top 15 health systems in the nation.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Aging Redefined. I'm your host, Kendra Vallone, joined by my co-host, Dr. Larry Emder. And today we've got an awesome show for you. So, Dr. Emder, I'll hand it over to you, and you can introduce our guest.
With great pleasure, I'd like to introduce Chaplain John Gilman, who did his undergrad in Indiana at St. Meinrad College. He has a doctoral degree in religious studies in Europe from the University of Lucerne in Belgium. He's a clinical pastoral educator, a supervisor at Vitas Hospice, and he's a lecturer on religious studies at San Diego State University. John, welcome to our show.
Okay, thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Yeah, we're excited to have you. This show is really cool because we've got so many different aspects of health, and really when it comes down to it, Vitas is such a great sponsor for us, but
absolutely,
they really handle that kind of end-of-life care, but throughout life, chaplains play such a big role. So I'm kind of fascinated just about what your role is and what you do.
That should be the first question.
Yeah, what is a chaplain?
Yeah.
Okay, that's a great question. Thanks, and it's a wonderful place to start. Well, chaplains are professionals who have been trained to provide spiritual care for folks in an interfaith environment. In other words, chaplains have the kind of training to meet a person where he or she is, you know, whether a person belongs to a religious organization or not, whether a person describes oneself as religious or spiritual. So the role of the chaplain is to accompany a person on one's own journey, and specifically in hospice care is to accompany a person on one's journey as they are facing death, say within a few months or even a few weeks, as to help offer support to them, to offer prayer when requested, to provide rituals, and so forth. But mainly the heart of chaplaincy is to establish a helping relationship with the patient or the family member and to journey with that person going forward.
Okay. So are all chaplains religious?
All chaplains have a religious denomination that they are sponsored by. Chaplains may be either connected to a religious organization which is more Western, either Judaism, Christianity, or Islam, mm-hmm. or chaplains could also be from the Buddhist tradition, the Hindu tradition, or one of the Eastern traditions as well. So chaplains span the whole spectrum of the religious scene, you know, across the board.
So how's the training different for a chaplain than, let's say, a priest?
Chaplains have they're required to have a Master's of Divinity, which also those who become priests will have a Master's of Divinity, and that's a 3-year intensive master's degree. So that's one thing they need on the educational side. But in addition to that, chaplains need to complete a practicum, which is called clinical pastoral education. And to become a certified chaplain, a person needs 1 full year of clinical training. So actual hands-on training at the bedside in a supervised environment. And so once they have both the degree, the Master's of Divinity, and the 1 year of clinical pastoral education, then chaplains can present themselves to become board certified by the Association of Professional Chaplains.
What do you learn? I'm just so fascinated by this. What do you learn during your Master's of Divinity?
Okay, great question. Okay. All right, in terms of the program, a person will learn how to understand, explore the Bible, Old and New Testament. A person will learn, take courses on about God, so courses on theology. A person will take courses on religious pluralism, in other words, how different religious organizations relate to each other and interact with each other. They also will take courses on ethics, as well as pastoral care. So it gives you some idea of the kinds of programs or courses they might take. In addition to that, a person doing a Master's of Divinity will take courses in Greek and Hebrew.
So no kidding.
Right. So it's a time to plunge into the ancient languages. And the purpose for that is to really get a good insight into the biblical text, to work with the original language, mm-hmm. and to understand as deeply as possible what the stories are about, what the text is trying to communicate to us today in the 21st century.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which makes sense. I think that's one thing that English lacks. As I read through the Bible, we have words that are just kind of so flat. But Hebrew, I know in the Old Text, if you get a pastor or somebody that describes the Bible for you, they'll say, you know, this is the Hebrew word and it actually means this.
Wow.
And it just comes through in such a different way. So I would imagine that that plays a really big role in trying to understand what was written.
So how far back does the chaplains go in history?
Okay, a wonderful question. One can go all the way back to around 3000 BCE and look at some of the religious functions that some of the leaders in the community had then. At that time, both the attention to the physical and the spiritual was often combined into one person. And to take an example, in the Egyptian hieroglyphics, there are pictographs of a person, a religious functionary, and putting one's hands on a person to be healed. So there's indication of chaplaincy going that far back.
Wow.
Now, the term itself, though, the term chaplain was first used in the 4th century, and it's connected to a story by Martin de Porres. And briefly, I'll tell you the story. It's an exciting story. He was a Roman soldier, and he was riding along, and he saw a beggar in freezing conditions, poorly clothed. And so Martin stopped, got off the horse, split his cloak down the middle, and gave half to the beggar. Well, that night he had a vision of Jesus, and Jesus was wearing that half of the cloak.
Wow.
And shortly after that, he became quite well known, and he decided to convert to Christianity. But then the cloak, people remembered his cloak. And so some of the kings then in the Middle Ages would carry his cloak into battle as a sign of God's presence with them.
Wow.
And as that developed, the kings would appoint someone to take care of the cloak. And that person took on the name of Capellanus, which today in English we call it chaplain.
Oh.
And so the person who cared for that cloak was called a chaplain. And then also connected to that, we have the word chapel. So from Capellanus, it's the short step from there to the English word chaplain, I mean to the English chapel, and then the person who is the religious leader for a chapel is the chaplain. And so that's briefly the origin of the term chaplain, again, going back to the fourth century.
Okay.
So can anybody be a chaplain, or is there a difference between like a chaplain and then somebody that preaches, for example, or are they the same?
There is a difference. Someone who preaches is normally connected to a religious body, whether it's Catholic, Protestant, or some other religious group, and that person will be specially trained, often in a denominational school. But a chaplain is someone who's going to be trained about religious traditions across the board. So a chaplain functions more in a interreligious, interfaith environment. And so the training for a chaplain is often broader than a person who would be trained to be a preacher, for example.
Okay. Yeah. So you have history of kind of multiple religions within you, but say you're going to visit somebody through VITAS, which would probably be more of their end of life days. Would you see somebody who would be of another religion, like Jewish or Buddhist, or would they focus somebody more that is studies Buddhism?
Okay,
trying to be like politically correct about
okay, great. All right, chaplains are trained to meet people where they are. And so one of the trainings that happens in the Clinical Path to Education program is to listen closely, deeply, and very attentively to the person who is before that person, whether patient or family member, and to discern what are the spiritual interests, the spiritual strengths, or religious background of that person, and then to support that person in his or her journey. Okay. So it's really to respect highly one's own religious journey rather than to impose one's own belief system or values on the particular person.
I didn't realize that. That's important.
Well, yeah, because I could only imagine if a family comes to you and says, he hasn't received Christ yet, he's going to die, can you help him get there? Do you hear that a lot?
You know, sometimes we do, and that's a tough question, especially if you have a family member who is really feels strongly about that, then we, you know, approach the person compassionately, the family member, and remind them that your loved one has his own spiritual journey and it may be different from yours. And what we do as chaplains is to respect and support your loved one's spiritual journey.
Mm, okay.
rather than to impose a belief system on your loved one.
Got it.
So it's got to be tough to be dealing with this these issues and someone's at death and dying on a daily basis. How do you handle that personally?
Well, it's tough, but also it's extremely rewarding.
Okay.
The experience of being with people who are facing death, they're at a point in their life where they don't have time to focus on things that are more superficial. With death just a week or so away, or maybe even a few days away, in as much as a person can tell, the really important questions in their life come right to the surface.
Wow.
Questions about meaning, questions about what has our life been like, questions about relationship. And so it is a profound privilege to journey with someone, you know, those last weeks of one's life, those last few days of one's life. You know, and sometimes, you know, it does take a toll on us.
Yeah,
and so for chaplains, and for in response to your question, it's really important for us to be attentive to our own self-care. You know, in terms of diet, you were talking about that earlier, exercise, recreation, and so forth, meditation. I mean, all that is part of taking care of ourselves so we can be better prepared to take care of those who are facing some really significant questions.
Fascinating. I'm very curious about what you might have, you've been doing this for so many years, right? What you might have learned by doing this, experiencing everybody kind of at the end of days. I feel like so many people have revelations about life and things that they might have said. But before you answer that, we have to take a quick break. So I'm sorry. So I'll give you a second to think about it. I'm giving you some time. Audience out there, stay with us. We will be right back with John Gilman talking more about a chaplain's role in your life. Stay with us.
When it comes to treatment of heart disease, there are many choices, but there's no better choice than Alvarado Hospital, right here, close to home. I'm Dr. Mike Mikowski, a cardiologist with Alvarado Hospital. I am proud that our specialists bring a level of knowledge, skill, and technology that have greatly improved the lives of those in our community for the past 40 years. For more information about our cardiovascular and stroke services, please visit alvaradohospital.com or call 1-800-ALVARADO.
Alvarado is proud to be part of the top 15 health systems in the nation.
The hospital is a place for healing, but what if you're not ready to go home? If your doctor's recommending skilled nursing for extended care, Villa Las Palmas is your next step. From subacute needs to physical and occupational therapy, we handle the highest level of care outside the hospital. With our around-the-clock doctor coverage, you know you're getting the best care possible with a plan to get you stable and back home. Ask your doctor about Villa Las Palmas Healthcare Center and let us help you get back to health. For more information, please visit our website, villalaspalmascares.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another show of Aging Redefined. I'm your host, Kendra Vallone, and I'm joined by my co-host, Dr. Larry Emder. And our special guest today is Chaplain John Gilman. So Chaplain John is with VITAS Hospice, who's one of our awesome sponsors. But John, at the end of the last segment, I kind of sprung a question on you, and I'm very curious about it. You have been doing this for years, and as you're you know, visiting patients or you know, individuals that kind of, you know, want to talk to you at the end of the life. Have you picked up anything? Like, have you learned anything? Obviously, people come up with revelations at the end. You know, they want to spend more time with their family. Could you give us some information? I'm curious.
Sometimes the people that we are privileged to care for have accomplished a great deal in their lives, perhaps started a company, perhaps made a lot of money and so forth, and so they can reflect upon that. But as they get toward death, my experience has been that what comes to the surface is much more than their accomplishments, but rather relationships and family. And sometimes there may be a situation where there's some division in the family, broken relationships. And what is so important then for the person at that point is to try to reach out, to desire a kind of reconciliation, to prepare themselves before death it comes. So the focus on relationships is one point. Mm-hmm. Another is the sense that often folks have a sense of gratitude for the life that they have lived, even though it has not all been smooth and rosy. You know, even with the bumps in the road, there's a sense of gratitude in terms of the life that they have experienced, and that gratefulness can put them into a open, accepting framework to welcome death when it comes. Now, sometimes it's not without struggle. There's that resistance. you know, to facing the dying experience. And so again, we help journey, we help a person by journeying with them to draw upon the strength they have, or the strength they can draw upon if they're a believer, the strength from God to make that journey.
Mm. Have you had any unique stories where somebody might have left us and then come back? Is that like a really bad question?
That's a really good question. From time to time, we do have stories where people have had what's known as a near-death experience. Mm-hmm. And it comes in various forms. Often the image of light is part of that story.
I've heard
and,
that.
Yeah, for some, you know, the book that came out some years ago about life after life. And so various forms of what can be called a near-death experience, those stories are sometimes shared with us. And what I have found, and my fellow chaplains have found, that when a person has an experience like that, it really helps to mitigate any kind of fear they might have in facing their own death, because they have that experience.
Right.
Yeah.
You get a little taste of it. I love documentaries. I think Dr. Ember and I, we were talking about this not too long ago, but I was watching one on near-death experiences, and everybody that was explaining it had just said that once that happened, they just felt so much love. There was light and they felt love. And I think that would, exactly how you said it, that would mitigate the fear. Mm-hmm. So
I think a good point to share with the experience you just described is that for our audience, you know, every day really is a gift, and our audience and ourselves really should be enjoying every day to the fullest. Mm-hmm. And I think the second thing is if you have broken relationships in your family, you know, now's the time to heal them, and you know, don't wait till you're dying. Mm. I mean, like any family, I am from four brothers and one sister, and some of them don't talk to each other. And I'm putting together a reunion, and you know, we're all, you know, in our 60s and 70s. And basically, I'm telling them, you know, like, hey, get over it. And, you know, now's the time to come together. I mean, you know, it's like, you know, the top of the seventh inning here.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, if you have a problem with this person, you know, let's deal with it and move on. So I think that's something, you know, I think our audience should think about as well.
And sometimes the role of the chaplain will help to facilitate that kind of reconciliation. Sometimes the patient will say, would you make the phone call to my brother,
wow,
who is in the Midwest, with whom I haven't spoken with for 25 years?
Oh, my gosh.
Can you make the phone call? Can you be here and help me with the conversation?
That's got to be great.
It really is. It's a great privilege to do that. Another time it might be, chaplain, I want to write a letter to my daughter. We haven't spoken with each other in 15 years. Can you help me write the letter and so we can send it? And so a chaplain then will, again, facilitate that kind of reconciliation. It's really a wonderful experience when that does happen, and when an estranged family member does show up after years of being away at the bedside. But there are also some instances, sad instances, when it doesn't happen.
Yeah,
so
I
we
can
have to
imagine.
Respect that too. Yeah. Mm.
So really, where does a chaplain do the majority of his or her work? If you're not necessarily preaching at a church, where would you be?
In terms of the work that I do with VITAS Innovative Hospice Care, the chaplains are there spending time with the patient, with family members, and with friends. And it could be either in a private home, it could be in a care facility, or it could be in a hospital. So the chaplain goes out into the community where the hospice patients are that we serve and begins there with the introduction and then doing a spiritual assessment and then doing a care plan to offer support for that person throughout one's journey. So it's out in the community where the person is living.
Okay. So how many of you are there?
We have 5 different teams, hospice teams, and we have one chaplain for each team. Medicare requires that for a hospice team, there have to be 4 main disciplines, as you know, a physician, a nurse, a social worker, and a chaplain. And so a chaplain has been named by Medicare as one of the essential disciplines that need to be involved in the interdisciplinary care of the person to provide holistic care for that person's journey.
Hmm. Now, I know there are chaplains for other organizations as well, right? Like military. Are you familiar with that at all?
There are military chaplains. There are also a lot of chaplains are in hospitals, prisons, hospitals that chaplains may be at universities, at student centers, for example. Chaplains sometimes are on cruise liners, and so chaplains could give you know, talks for people taking a cruise. So there are many different environments for chaplains to serve in.
And so they're not all focused on end of life?
No, no. Mainly it would be chaplains who are in a hospice setting, who are focused on end of life care and support.
Oh, got it. Okay.
So how do you know, chaplains like make a difference, do you think?
Well, there have been quite a number of studies that have indicated the difference that chaplains have made. And I actually brought with me a handbook, Handbook of Religion and Health, which is edited by Koenig, Harold Koenig, and others. And the second edition just came out last year. And in that second edition, he cites over 2,800 studies which focus on the connection between religion and health. And the predominant number of those studies indicate that religion has a positive impact on the health of folks. And so, again, many of these studies will talk about that positive impact. One example, there was a study of a large-based study indicating that people who are active in their religion, you know, attending on a regular basis, they tend to live 7 years longer than those who are not active in a religious tradition.
Wow.
I'm kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
And there are other studies, too, that show that people who are in a hospital who receive support from a chaplain, those people have a higher appreciation of the medical care. They have a higher satisfaction rating at the hospital. And that's really going to come into focus now with the new Affordability Care Act in terms of the way hospitals are going to be rated in terms of the care that's provided. So bottom line is that those hospitals that have a really fine and excellent spiritual care program will be the ones who will rise above the others in terms of the satisfaction levels.
Are hospitals required to have chaplains?
Hospitals are required to provide spiritual care for the people they care for. They are required to respect spiritual beliefs, and they are required to follow up on spiritual requests. Now, JACO, the accrediting body for hospitals, they don't require that somebody has on staff a chaplain, although most of them do, but they do require that the organization provides for the spiritual needs of their patients.
So I know some of our Catholic patients in the hospital, you ask for communion when they're really sick. That would come from a priest, or would they come from a chaplain, or how does that work?
Yeah, the communion of the sick for Catholic patients would often be provided either by the priest or by a lay Eucharistic minister from the parish that person belongs to. Also, if a chaplain is a Catholic, then a Catholic chaplain can bring communion to Catholic patients, whether in a hospice or in a hospital setting.
Yeah. Now, at any time, do you kind of join forces? Say somebody is Jewish and they want their rabbi there. Would that happen?
Oh, sure. So one of the key roles there then is to make a referral to the rabbi in response to the patient request.
Okay.
Now, also in terms of the Jewish tradition, there's a rabbi who has been assigned to care for the large percentage of Jewish patients who are not affiliated. And so a chaplain then would make a referral to that rabbi if a patient makes a request. I want to see a rabbi. So the chaplain will make that referral then to that particular person.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Do you guys carry like beepers or mean that? Yeah, because these things.
Well, you know, figure out how do you contact one of them.
You know, hold it.
We used to carry beepers, and now it's mainly cell phones.
Okay.
Yeah. So we work with our voicemail system too. We check messages 2 or 3 times a day just to make sure that we're really current on recent patient request for a chaplain.
Because I asked that in the hospital, it's not 9 to 5, it's 7:24. So I would think you're getting called all hours of the day and night, true or false.
Yeah, exactly. So our organization provides spiritual care 24/7. So we have our regular team chaplains who provide spiritual care Monday through Friday, but also we have after hours chaplains who are available on weekends and evenings. So from like 5 p.m. until 8 in the morning. So
interesting. Okay, well, stay right with us, audience out there. We will be right back with John as we talk more about chaplains.
When Joe was in his last days, I was frightened of not having the right help at the right moment. So I set out to find a hospice I could call at any time, day or night. Only VITAS provided telecare, the 24-hour access we needed.
Mom's illness was overwhelming toward the end, and I wanted a hospice that had everything and everyone we needed. We discovered only VITAS employs more physicians who specialize in hospice care than anyone nationally. That made Mom and us feel better.
When Carol was dying, I promised she could stay at home and have the very best care. I did my research. Only VITAS had the experience to take care of the love of my life.
Call VITAS Innovative Hospice Care toll-free at 877-647-1124 for a free hospice evaluation. That's 877-647-1124. Or visit VITAS.com for more information.
Transition is always difficult, especially after surgery. At Villa Las Palmas Healthcare Center, we make sure it's as efficient as possible. As one of the highest-rated Medicare facilities in San Diego, we offer a variety of services to meet your needs. From subacute care to general physical therapy, we'll help create a plan to get you back to where you want to be. If your doctor recommends skilled nursing as your next step, come visit us and see how our skilled care has what you need to get back on your feet. For more information, please visit our website, VillaLasPalmasCares.com.
Okay, well, welcome back to our final segment dealing with Chaplain John. I guess our audience, if someone in our audience wanted to take this one as a career, what path would they take to get the necessary training?
Usually I get a number of calls each month for people who aspire to be chaplains. Sometimes it may be a call from a family member whose loved one died on hospice care maybe a year or so ago, and they've experienced how effective a chaplain was in their own life. Oh, yeah. And they also sense within themselves a calling to pursue the same profession, the same religious journey. And so they will call, and I will speak to them about their experience, invite them to come in for a conversation, and we'll talk to them about the steps a person needs to take in terms of the required theological background and then a clinical pathway education program. But also part of that for me is to listen very closely to the kinds of experiences that a person may have had in one's life when there's an openness and awareness of the holy or of mystery through which that person might be nudged or called to look at the calling of pastoral care or spiritual care. Sometimes we have folks who come to us after one or two careers and they want to pursue something which is more meaningful in their mm-hmm. own life. Some years ago, we had one of the top nuclear physicists in the country who had a stellar career that was very satisfying for him. He was in his 70s, but he wanted to do something different. He wanted to have an experience where he could focus on the relationship and to be with people in their dying moments. And so it was a great experience to have him in the program.
Wow.
So a person can be in their 20s or in their 70s and go through the program to become a chaplain.
And how long is the program? I mean, you were saying there's years involved, right?
Well, the clinical pathway education part is 1 year of full-time training.
Okay.
And then in addition to that, there would be the 3 years Masters of Divinity program. That's to become a fully certified chaplain. Now, sometimes a person will choose to become a chaplain, but not go on for certification, and the training is not quite as long or quite as intense.
But they can still sit bedside with somebody. What are the limitations? What other limitations would they have if they didn't go through the training?
The limitations might be if a person's not ordained, mm-hmm. then a person will not be able to do, for example, provide all the sacraments that a person may need. So there's some restrictions there.
What about I'm sure like the Army and the Air Force, they must have a training program for chaplains.
They do. And actually the training program for both Army, Air Force, and the Veterans Administration, it's very similar. They need a Master's of Divinity and clinical pastoral education. And so the training program is quite parallel to what I've been talking about.
And you were telling us while we were off the air is that the Senate actually has a full-time chaplain.
Yes, the Senate has a full-time chaplain, and some of you may have noticed on the news a few weeks ago, or perhaps a month or so ago, when things were a bit tense in the Senate, mm-hmm. and the chaplain was quite intentional about saying a prayer, offering a reflection that would help create greater cooperation and collaboration at the Senate. So that created created the news story there. So there is a chaplain assigned to the U.S. Senate.
Got it.
Yeah.
I would imagine with so many different religions that you can't just be so I don't know, open about it all the time, that you would run into a little bit of conflict if you've got family members that have multiple religions, or, you know, somebody's not saying that they're one thing or the other. Do you run into any issues?
You mean with it, like atheists or something?
Well, atheists is a good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean that, but also you've got some seriously conflicting religions.
Yeah. I mean, you may have a family member who's ultra religious and a family member who's an atheist. Have you ever seen anything like that?
That is not unusual.
That's what I figured.
And so the challenge of the chaplain is to journey with both those folks. So whether a person is religious or an atheist, I think every human person in one form or another asks the question about meaning and purpose in one's life. And the response is going to be very different, whether it's a religious person or an atheist, but a chaplain is trained to have that kind of conversation with the person. Now, part of the challenge, too, is for a chaplain to not let one's own religious beliefs get in the way, but at the same time not give them up either, but to remain grounded in one's own faith tradition while being available to interact with people from very different traditions or no particular faith tradition, like an atheist, for example, or an agnostic.
Or people that might believe in reincarnation.
The Eastern tradition, sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Interesting, fascinating.
So you're the Clinical Pastoral Education Supervisor, CPE, at Vitas Hospital. So I guess you're responsible for training other chaplains. So, as a physician, I have to do ongoing education, CME. Mm-hmm. So what kind of programs do you have for yourself and for your chaplains ongoing education as a chaplain? Mm-hmm.
Our various national organizations, they provide 2 or 3 days of top quality seminars that we participate in. Some of it are web-based programs, some of it could be reading, and so we have a variety of ways to complete our continuing education hours. Also, you mentioned your role as a physician and your requirement to have so many hours. I want to mention that various programs, we have had physicians in our program as well. A few years ago, we had an OBGYN, a person from China, who had practiced for over 20 years and wanted to incorporate into his work also the spiritual care. And so we've had physicians in the program as well to focus on the pastoral education side of it.
Mm. What other roles do pastors play? I know we've been talking about, end of life, but do you, can you perform, a marriage ceremony, a wedding ceremony, those types of things as well?
Okay, if a chaplain is licensed, a person can do a marriage ceremony. We have had a few cases, beautiful situations, where a person's at the end of life, they're on hospice care, and they have their partner, and they've not married. And so one of their goals is to have that marriage ceremony before they die. Mm. And so we arrange to have that in the home there. The person might be bedfast, but we have the cake, we have families, the witnesses,
cool.
And it is a great celebration. So chaplains can do, again, if they're licensed, marriages, baptisms, blessings, rituals in various forms and so forth. And we use a lot of symbols too. We use candles, we use blessed water, we use oil. And so we have a variety of things to use to express the presence of the sacred.
Okay, and christenings as well. Would you be doing
christening?
That?
Yes.
Interesting. Yeah. Fascinating. So, with all the years that you've been doing this, you must have some awesome stories.
Well, there are many stories that stand out. I want to take one story from some years ago when I was a chaplain at one of our major medical centers here in San Diego, and I went in to see this woman on a medical unit, and I introduced myself, and she said, "I don't want to see a chaplain." Well, I always respect people's request in that way. And normally I would say, well, thank you, I'm available if you need someone. But something told me, perhaps an inner voice, don't leave right away. And so I stood there and we had a brief interchange. You said, well, sit down. So I said, okay. So I sat down by the bed and I thought, where is this going to go? Hmm. And first of all, she doesn't say too much. I think she's sizing me up.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's probably thinking, well, he didn't run away. He's still here. So
was she all by herself?
She was by herself, and she was quite ill.
Okay.
And she was also angry. Mm. She did not want to be in the hospital, and she had all this stuff going on. And slowly she begins to tell me her story of everything she had been holding within herself.
Mm.
40 minutes later,
wow,
she says, now I know why I came to this hospital. And it had to do with that conversation. It wasn't so much about me, but about her openness to speak to a lot of tension, a lot of stress, a lot of unresolved feelings she was holding within herself, and use that opportunity to share with me, the chaplain at the bedside, what she was going through. And then together we worked a bit on how she can address some of these issues that she was facing. So it was a very privileged moment for me.
Wow. So at that point, is it just easing them to the point where they are able to let go? Or is it more of a healing process?
It's a healing process. It's a gradual process.
Okay.
Yeah. And part of it is be able to listen to the story without judgment. So listen to the story with a sense of compassion and great empathy.
Okay. That would be very difficult, especially as you brought up earlier, not being able to, or you don't want to impose your own beliefs on somebody. So do you get a full on understanding of what their beliefs are before you walk into a room?
Often not.
Mm.
Sometimes that understanding comes by asking a question to the person. What are the strengths, your inner strengths you have to draw upon? Sometimes we'll use language which is not spiritual language or not religious language, but just speak about inner strength. And I believe that every person has a source of inner strength. Sometimes a person may not realize it, but once they're asked the question, they begin to think, oh yes, there's this difficult situation I went through 15 years ago, and this is what got me through. And so a chaplain will help facilitate that conversation to also invite them to tap in again to that strength, that holy being, or whatever that was that helped them through a difficult situation during a prior time of their life.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. John, if we've got audience members out there that are listening that might want to get a hold of you or that are curious about becoming a chaplain, how can they reach out?
Okay, a wonderful question, and I encourage you to do that, our listening audience. So a way to do that is to contact VITAS Innovative Hospice Care.
Okay.
You contact us, and then we'll get the message from them and would like to really respond to you. Check out the phone number. All right, so phone number to contact VITAS is 858-499-8901. Mm-hmm. My name is John Gilman, one of the chaplains there at VITAS.
Awesome. John, thank you so much for coming on the show today. This has been really, really insightful, especially with the holidays coming up.
Yeah, I mean, I've been dealing with chaplains for 20 years and finally learned all the skills and
Now you can apply that and have another resource for your patients.
Right, for some chaplain input on my patients. So thank you for sharing.
You're welcome. It's a great privilege for me to be part of the show, and I wish all of our listeners a happy holiday, happy Thanksgiving.
Ah, thank you. Dr. Emder, if people want to get a hold of you.
I'm on the web at drlarryemder.com or 619-286-8803.
And if you want to get in touch with the show, find us on Facebook. We are Aging Redefined Radio. Feel free to send us a message. If you've got a topic you'd like to hear brought up on the radio, we can definitely do that for you too. Or you can always email me at kvallone@plumh.com. That's K-V-A-L-L-O-N-E at plumh.com. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we will talk to you next week.
You've been listening to Aging Redefined with your host, Kendra Vallone.